The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Ali Moreno. A little later on in the program, Gab Marcotti will be here to reflect on a big win for Juve today. But we start in the Champions League. Some good matches, isn't there, coming up over the next couple of days. We'll start by looking ahead to Atletico Madrid against Chelsea. Somehow the bookies have got Chelsea as favourites. Huh? 6-4 on to advance to the next round. Atleti then 11-10. Remember, Atleti absolutely flying in La Liga the first half of the season. They have somewhat, just a little bit, fallen off course. Levante being very much the thorn in their side. Drew against them on Wednesday, lost on Saturday. Let's welcome in, shall we, Don Hutchison and Sid Lowe to look ahead to this game. Sid, let's start off with an Atleti perspective, shall we? What's gone wrong with them? They all right?
Yeah, they are all right. I think what's gone wrong with them in part was that this was likely to happen at some stage, although perhaps not in quite this way. Bear in mind, they've now dropped as many points in 12 days as they had in the entire season up until that point. But this is not a full-on collapse. In the last four games, it's one victory, two draws and a defeat. But as I say, they've been on such good form. I think it was 50 of 57 points in the first half of the season that it feels like a collapse. I think in a way, if you look at their results before this, there were games where they were always on edge. There were games where they were just about coming through. A very late winner at Eibar, a very late winner at Alaves, for example. They've gone behind much more often than previously in the season. Remember when they conceded to Real Madrid, it was the first minute they'd been behind in the entire season. That's now happened more often. They're conceding early goals. They've gone seven games in a row conceding. So there was a sense that probably at some point this would tip slightly. Now, not into a full-blown crisis, but certainly into a situation where they weren't necessarily going to maintain that level of incredible efficiency in winning games that they'd had up until 3 or 4 weeks ago.
And they're coming up against the Chelsea side, Don, still unbeaten under Tuchel, but very, very ordinary against Southampton.
Yeah, just methodical, Dan. They're a hard side to watch, Chelsea. They're getting the job done. Didn't against Southampton. They got a draw, but they were a hard watch. And I think Thomas Tuchel early on, I think he's testing these players. I think he's testing their mentality. He's testing the players in different systems. He put Callum Hudson-Odoi on at the weekend. He lasted 15 minutes and took him straight back off again. So he didn't work particularly hard off the ball. Put Hakim Ziyech back on. So it's a Chelsea side where you're watching. You just think, come on, where's the spark? Where's the attacking flair? They're just very, very methodical.
Get a feeling it's going to be tight in Ali. I can't imagine being free-flowing, end-to-end attacking football 4-3 job.
So Don just called Chelsea methodical.
Yep.
If you think of Atletico Madrid, you don't exactly feel like, hey, yep. Look at them. They're open. They're attacking. They're going to commit numbers forward. And so therefore, if you have an Atletico Madrid team that has been struggling to get results and you have a Chelsea team that is quote-unquote methodical, then yes, you are exactly correct. This is not 4-3. This is set pieces. This is very tight, very tactical, certainly in the first leg, in which it's going to make it physical from Atletico Madrid. They have to get back to that. They've lost a little bit of that, and they've lost a little bit of attention to details. In the game against Levante over the weekend, in a goal that was not scored by Morales, early on, there's a ball over the top from a set piece, attacking set piece of Atletico Madrid on a missed clearance. All of a sudden, this ball goes over the top 50 yards and Morales is in a one-on-one situation against Oblak. That doesn't happen against Atletico Madrid, but it's been happening more and more often over the last 10 days or so. They have to clean up those details, and in cleaning up those details, what you're going to find is a team that is going to be very, very difficult to beat.
A team with some injuries as well, Atleti have going into this clash, Sid. How do you see them setting up?
To be honest, it's very difficult to tell you how I think they'll set up because Simeone has shown signs that he's not entirely convinced about the various options that he's got. Now, a lot of this starts, of course, with the absence of Kieran Trippier. To put this into perspective for you, five different players have played in Trippier's position. None of them have entirely convinced. I think Marcos Llorente will start there, but Simeone himself admitted that you get more from Llorente further up the pitch, but he's basically got to put him in the right-back slot. I think he's got doubts about Lodi at left-back. I think he may even have doubts about whether to play with a three-man central defensive unit with two wing-backs or a normal 4-4-2. I think there's maybe one doubt about one of the midfielders. So I think when you look at this, it's not at all clear what Simeone's starting lineup will be. And that's beyond the fact that, as you've already said, that there are players missing. Trippier is out. Jimenez is a big loss for them. Carrasco is a very big loss for them as well. So I think his options are far more limited than he would like.
Don, if I was to offer you £250 to give me the Chelsea starting 11, that's a very difficult guess as well, isn't it?
It's almost impossible, Dan. It really, really is. I mean, you know, Sid's picking a 3 through Atletico Madrid. I'm doing the same for Chelsea. And that's why, as Ali said, this is a 0-0. This is going down to the detail. More or less the same system. He seems to love Kovacic. He's his favourite player so far. Thomas Tuchel, I think he plays Kante alongside with him. Marcus Alonso at left wing back and James, Rhys James at right wing back. Up top's pretty hard. I've gone with Timo Werner off the left. Giroud leading the line. And I've gone for Hudson-Odoi because, as I said before, he took him off in the Southampton game. Sorry, he put him on in the Southampton game and took him back off for 20 minutes. And he's since then said some really positive things about Hudson-Odoi. So I'm thinking he's going to test him and test his attitude and start him in this big game. It's a big call, but I think that's the right way to get the player back on side again.
Oh, what if he pulls him off after 20 minutes starting him? Dramatic. Right, score, Ali.
This is a enthralling tactical battle.
Oh, no, not one of them. Marcotti will say it's great.
1-1.
1-1. Sid?
Yeah, I quite like 1-1 as well. As I say, I do think Atletico are a bit more vulnerable than you would normally anticipate them being. So I don't think they'll keep a clean sheet. Yeah, I quite like 1-1.
Don?
I'm going to go 1-0 Atletico Madrid. I think they get the job done, but make it boring, make it tight.
Meanwhile, of course, another La Liga team in action this week. Real Madrid taking on Atalanta. And I'll tell you what, if you bet in any way, pile on Atalanta at the moment because Real Madrid don't have any players. Take a look at the list of injuries that Zinedine Zidane is dealing with. Get ready. Karim Benzema, Sergio Ramos, Eden Hazard, Marcelo, Carvajal, Valverde, Rodrigo, Odriozola and Militao all out. All of them, every single one of them out for Wednesday's game against Atalanta. This is quite something, Sid.
Yeah, it really is. And I think there's a couple of absentees there that are particularly significant. Now, obviously, people talk about Sergio Ramos as the captain. He's significant. But I think it's Benzema that's the one that really stands out amongst them. Because while Real Madrid will almost certainly now play with Mariano up front, they don't really have a player who can replace Benzema. They don't really have a player who can do the things that he does. And if you look at Real Madrid's injury crises this year, it's curious because in a way, it hasn't affected too badly. Of course it's affected, but it hasn't affected too badly the starting 11. What it's tended to mean is you've looked at the bench and the bench is entirely made up of youth team products, but they've been able to put out a strong starting 11 each time. Not least because Kroos, Modric and Casemiro have almost always been available. But I think without Benzema, that puts a big, big hole in a forward line which already doesn't score enough goals. So I think the absence of Benzema is the one that really, really strikes you from that list that you've just read out.
Eden Hazard, of course, on that list, as he has been pretty much since he's joined Real Madrid. Interesting stuff from Felipe Luis in an interview with you, Sid. I picked up on this. Alongside Neymar, Eden's the best I've played with. He's up there with Messi, winning games alone. He didn't run to defend much, didn't train well, and 5 minutes before games, he'd be playing Mario Kart in the dressing room. He trained and warmed up, laces untied, so intelligent. 1-2, combined, go alone, assist, score, everything. Maybe he lacks the ambition to say, I'll be the world's best, because he could be, for talent, the best. And obviously the reason that is relevant, Sid, is because you take a look at it and said, well, maybe if he takes training more seriously, warms up better, then he wouldn't be suffering this injury crisis that he is.
It's very difficult, isn't it? And it's very difficult, certainly for me. I mean, and perhaps for Ali and for Don, it's easier to judge this because I don't know to what extent that kind of mentality impacts upon whether or not you get injured. I'm obviously not a doctor, I'm not a sports science expert, so I don't know how much of a role it has, whether that kind of character really impacts upon it. But it's certainly pretty striking. And obviously, in the midst of that is an extraordinary eulogy of Eden Hazard's talents. As I say, applying that then to what's happened at Real Madrid, I think is quite difficult. But I'd love to hear from the two guys who've actually played the game at professional level.
Well let's ask them, shall we? Hey. Those gentlemen. Not Ali's personal best on Rainbow Road, but instead focusing on Eden Hazard and the injuries. And is this a big deal?
It is a big deal. And I think the biggest thing from the quote that we just saw there is what Felipe Luis says, that he lacks the ambition. I can throw away all the other stuff that he said, but that one, that part in which he lacks the ambition to be the best, that drive, that we talk about Cristiano Ronaldo every time that we mention him as a player. You don't have that drive. You can be as talented as you want, but then there's going to be a limit. There's going to be a ceiling to how far that talent can take you. And what Eden Hazard is finding out is that talent alone is not going to sort you out as you get older. There is a moment in which professional, you have to be a professional first. You have the talent. You put those things together. You put that drive together. Now you can, at some point, try to be the best. But when you don't have the drive, when you don't have the ambition, you yourself, and that's the part that would be most frustrating for me if I were a fan of Eden Hazard, is that you yourself have put a ceiling lower to your career than what it could have been, than what it should have been. That is something that Eden Hazard, whenever he gets older and he's sitting back and he's looking back at his career, that's the one thing that I think he's going to regret.
Dom, when I was in Madrid, you'd see Brazilian Ronaldo wouldn't train with any sort of gusto. He'd be the last one running laps, but then he'd go on the pitch on match day, bang, and turn it on. So are we reading too much into the fact that maybe Hazard isn't the best trainer? Or like Ali says, psychologically, has he got issues because he's not fulfilling his ambition?
Yeah, that was a different era, Dan. I think what Eden Hazard is, he's a very casual player and he plays the game at his own speed and his own sort of tempo. He's always been casual when he was playing in England. I never had the feeling he could be the very best for what how he does and lives his lifestyle off the pitch. And just referring to the quotes there, I take from that is if he's being sloppy in his warm-ups and he's being sloppy with the time that he's spending before games, that tells me he's also probably being sloppy in his diet and what he does away from the pitch. You can't just eat what you like. You can't just not do your stretches. You can't just rock up and play for a club like Real Madrid and be the very best. I mean, it's tough enough when you're playing for a big club. That is one of the very biggest in the world. And you have to make sure all aspects of your game is absolutely on point. If you asked Ronaldo what he does away from the pitch, and we all know what he does, he stretches, he trains, he's on a bike before games, he's on a bike, you know, late, close to midnight after games, he's warming down. His routine, I would imagine, over the years has been absolutely spot on. And that's why he's still going now. Does Eden Hazard play close into his late 30s, the way his attitude and the way he's living his life? I'd probably guess not.
Well, despite the fact they haven't had Eden Hazard for much of the season, Real Madrid still very much in the title race, especially after Atleti dropping points against Levante at the weekend. Sid, I'll ask you this. Are you taking Atletico Madrid to win La Liga, or are you taking the field?
Look, Atletico Madrid are still in a good position, but you feel like the ceiling of the other clubs might be slightly higher, and you feel like that ability to turn draws into victories. You know, Atletico Madrid don't need a big collapse to be caught, as this last four games have shown us. They just need to not quite get over the line. So I'm taking the field, I think.
Wow. Really, Sid? How things have changed, Ali?
No, I'm still taking Atletico Madrid because the feel is not very good. And when we say the feel, we're really talking Real Madrid.
That's a very good point.
And we're talking Real Madrid. And we just said all the absences that Real Madrid has and will have for some time. So I just don't see that Real Madrid will be consistent enough or perfect enough over the closing stages of the season. Atletico Madrid will hang on, but they have made this far more stressful than it needed to be.
Meanwhile, Sid, Barcelona terrible against PSG. Season is falling apart at the seams. What is interesting, some of the reports that I've seen coming from some journalists suggesting, well, that's okay because they can rebuild now. They know where to focus over the summer. But they don't have any money. Where is this kind of disillusion theory coming from?
I'm with you on this. It's very striking. I don't think in the time that I've lived in Spain, which is 20 years now, I don't think I've seen a season in which Barcelona have been beaten and people have kind of gone, well, you know, it was what we expected. It's transitional. There's young players coming through, which, by the way, is all true.
Yeah.
And it's true that they knew that they had a long way to go. And it's true that they know that they look at the team now and they see three or four young players who are genuinely going to be very good indeed. I think Araujo is going to be very good. Frankie de Jong is going to be very good. Pedri, of course, is one that really stands out. Ansu Fati before his injury. But it's interesting that the next layer to that is signings. Now, bear in mind, that on the 7th of March, we've got presidential elections. We've got three candidates, all of whom have talked about the financial difficulties that the club faces. And I think have talked in really quite realistic terms so far about how, you know, you can't just go and spend a lot of money. And then today, one of the candidates who, for what it's worth, is the least likely of the three to win. And I must say as well, I think the least credible in some of the things he said, look, I can get money. I can get a loan. I can get a bank credit, which means that we could go into the market with 250 million euros worth of signings, a possibility for the club. Now, beyond the fact that you've still then got to persuade those players to come, you've still got to tell them that this is the place that you want to be. It's not borrowing lots of money for players that you couldn't really afford part of what put them in this problem in the first place. I mean, it just seems absurd to me, to be honest with you.
I just wonder, as you're on, Sid, and I know you wrote an article about this, and Ali brought this up last week, just Spanish teams in Europe, and it has not exactly been a great week for them. Obviously, PSG thrashing Barcelona, Sevilla losing it against a poor Borussia Dortmund side. I know they got Haaland, but they're not tearing it up in the Bundesliga. United thrashing Real Sociedad. There were wins for Villarreal and Granada. How much has this been picked up in Spain? The obvious gulf, and Ali summed up in almost athleticism between the Spanish sides and those that they're coming up against.
Yeah, it's been picked up a lot. The first thing, as you say, just the basics. Look, you know, look at these teams. Look how good they are. Look how strong they are. The sense that it's not just about this year as well. Although, you know, let's not go too far. It's not that long ago that Spanish teams were amongst the very, very best in Europe. The second part of what you say, I think, is also true. There's been a sense of analysing not just the fact that they were beaten, but the way in which they were beaten. And in particular, through the eyes of Haaland and Mbappe, talking about very dynamic, very direct, very physical players, young players who play in a way that Spanish teams are perhaps less used to. And there's all sorts of reasons for that. There are cultural reasons, there are refereeing reasons, to be perfectly honest, as well. There's obviously underpinning all of this an economic reason. And there is a sense, I think, in Spain that there's a concern that the financial muscle of the Premier League and then three or four other really big clubs, say Bayern Munich, say Paris Saint-Germain, possibly to some extent Juventus, although I think less so. There is a concern that those clubs are getting away from them. And by the way, this all filters into something else that, of course, has been a big talking point over the last month or so. This is one of the reasons why it's the Spanish clubs who are so full-heartedly behind the idea of a European Super League, because they see it as their salvation, because they see it as otherwise there's a risk that they get left behind.
Sid, thank you very much, as always. By the way, Sid has written in some detail what we were just talking about, the fact that those Spanish teams are struggling in Europe of late. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Action in Italy today saw Juventus beat Crotone by 3-0. Cristiano Ronaldo with a brace. Wes McKennie as well getting on the score sheet, meaning that Juve closed the gap on AC Milan to 4 points with a game in hand. Let's welcome in, shall we, Gab Marcotti, to reflect on that win. Should we talk about Ronaldo? Nice couple of headers, Gab.
Yeah, and I think more than the headers, the movement to get open for both, to be in the right place at the right time, I think that was the real difference makers. I thought Juventus, once they got going, there was much contest. There's a reason why Crotone are bottom of the table. But Cristiano showing his worth. It's not just about striking the ball and shooting on goal. It's about getting yourself open so you can receive the ball. And he does that incredibly well.
And another goal for Weston McKennie.
Yep. Look, Weston McKennie is so important to Juventus right now in the way he makes those runs forward into the backs. So it was a bit different today because, of course, they had Aaron Ramsey in midfield. Normally, you would expect it's Ramsey's job. So I think Weston McKennie had to perhaps check himself a little bit in the way he operated. But that's fine. He's Mr. Versatility on this Juve team. And once again, came up very, very big. And I think increasingly, if the two guys who really need to start every game for Juve in midfield, it's Bentancur and McKennie.
Do we learn anything much more from this game, Gab, given, as you mentioned, how bad Crotone are?
I think the back line played really well. I think Juve as a whole, this formula with Chiesa and Kulusevski wide, I think it works, but it works a lot better when Morata's in there. We've said it before, we've said it many times. Morata gives you that threat behind, which frees up Cristiano and makes Cristiano more productive. That said, I saw some very good things from Chiesa. And I think defensively, this defensive partnership of De Ligt and Demiral, obviously that's the way forward. And I think it makes everybody around them more settled. It makes the midfield be a little more aggressive in the way they defend, because the back line isn't sitting in front of the goal. And I think it's much closer to where Pirlo wants them to be. Now, you're going to ask, oh, can they do it against higher quality opponents? I don't know. Let's find out.
Gab, as you're with us, I want to take a look at Lazio against Bayern Munich. Bayern, big favourites, 6-1 on. Lazio come in as underdogs at 4-1. Bayern, of course, misses some key players, in particular Thomas Müller. How much of a chance do you give Lazio?
I give him a decent chance. I mean, look, you saw at the weekend, when Thomas Müller is out, Bayern don't press as well. And the way Bayern defend is by pressing you high up the pitch, because they're not comfortable further back. Already, you know, Bayern are going to be without Pavard because they don't trust Bounassar. That means that Nicolas Süle will once again be, you know, one of the world's biggest, or certainly the Champions League biggest right back. And that creates one-on-ones. And if you look at the players Lazio has, with the likes of Luis Alberto, Correa, and Milinkovic-Savic, you know, they like their chances with those runners from midfield, and obviously Mobile to go and finish him off. No Gnabry either, of course, for Bayern. And so it'll be interesting to see how they react psychologically after dropping points against Arminia Bielefeld and, of course, getting beaten by Frankfurt at the weekend.
Gab Marcotti, as always, thank you very much. A lot more from Gab on the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast, which is available now. Look, Mark Ogden's there as well to download over on the website.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Despite all their issues and all their injuries, and Jordan Henderson out, according to the bookies, Liverpool are still amongst the favourites to qualify for the Champions League next season. Steve Nicol, Don Acheson, Steve, do you agree?
Oh my goodness. Well, I tell you what, it's not usually a smart move to go against the bookies, because normally they're right, but I'm trying to figure a way of how they're going to be right, because the way I'm thinking, they must think that Liverpool's front three are going to catch fire, because that's the only way they're going to qualify for the Champions League next year. And nobody can turn around today and really put their hand on their heart and think that that's just going to happen. Because right now, regardless of the opposition, the front three, they don't look as though they can score against anybody. So to have them so strongly fancied to get in the top four doesn't make any sense to me, I'm afraid.
Don, you were shaking your head.
Well, I've got no idea how the bookies think Liverpool are going to get in the top four when they're chasing one spot. I mean, Leicester are 9 points ahead of Liverpool. Liverpool are not reading Leicester in, who are in third, 9 points away from them, so they're only chasing one spot. And there's so many clubs wanting that fourth position, and Liverpool are bang out of form. I've got no idea how the bookies have them favourites to finish fourth.
I suppose the issue is, Ali, if you look at the other contenders, OK? West Ham, we're expecting them to slip up at some stage. Chelsea haven't exactly set the world alight under Tuchel. So that every other team have got their issues as well.
Yeah. And that's exactly it. What do the bookies think about Chelsea?
Right.
Not very highly, obviously. Not in a manner in which you would think, okay, you know, Chelsea's going to go on a run. What we have seen from Chelsea under Thomas Tuchel is ordinary, is boring, predictable, but somewhat effective, I suppose. They're getting results. How long is that going to last unless they start actually playing better and being more dynamic in the attack? So I can see where you sort of frame it towards Liverpool and say, this is a team I trust. But the problem is that the team that they're trusting is not the team that is actually on the field right now. The team that they're trusting is the team from the past.
Yeah.
It's the team from last season. It's the personality and the energy from years gone. The team of this season, you cannot trust. And certainly not that back line. And that, to me, is the key. That you're thinking about Liverpool of what they were 6 months ago, a year ago. It's a much different team than what they are right now.
Go on, Steve.
The common denominator between the three teams you just spoke about is that two of the three, regardless of whether they're playing well or not, are picking up points.
Right.
Liverpool are not picking up points, regardless of how they're playing. That's the difference between these three teams that are going for this one spot. And so you can't go for Liverpool because regardless of how they play, they're not getting the points where the other two sides are.
The only thing I can think of is I think the bookies might be looking at the next few fixtures, and Chelsea's fixtures are horrendous for them. And Man City play West Ham next. So,
but Liverpool don't have any defenders. Jordan Henderson's out. Don, what are they going to do?
No, I get that, Dan. I get the argument.
Doesn't matter who Liverpool play against right now.
I'm just trying to think of why the bookies have got them favourites. And I'm thinking, well, obviously Man City are going to beat West Ham next up. So it might edge Liverpool if they beat Sheffield United. And as I said, Chelsea's fixtures, their next four or five are horrendous. But Liverpool have just got to get their job done. I mean, I've got no confidence in Liverpool now going on three or four games unbeaten. I don't see where the wins are coming from.
Meanwhile, just to wrap up the Premier League, you may have missed this in Fulham's game against Sheffield United. Late on, there were some question marks of whether or not there should be a penalty, Don.
What? Oh, it's ridiculous. I mean, Jaden Bogle goes in with Areola, the goalkeeper, and Areola gets a touch. This is a great angle. He gets a touch with his left foot. But look how he wipes them out by the knees. I mean, honestly, the first thing that came to mind when I saw that was the Jordan Pickford Van Dijk tackle. It was more or less the same scenario. I mean, there were some baffling decisions. Harry Maguire elbowed Jamal Lascelles off the ball. Newcastle should have had a penalty. There was all sorts happening in the Burnley-West Brom game. But I'd done the commentary on this game, and I couldn't believe that the referee didn't give a penalty.
Why didn't they go to VAR, Don? Why didn't you go to the monitor?
I've no idea.
What were you doing?
Dan, I've got no idea because I got asked in commentary in real time, what do I think? And I saw penalty. The only thing that can maybe give Areola an out is he gets a touch of his left foot.
Yeah.
But he wiped Jaden Bogle at both knees. This is the best angle. So you'll see the left side of Areola get a touch on the ball, but look how high he is. I mean, I can't catch my breath how that's not been given.
Stevie, is this clear and obvious, though?
Absolutely not. I'm shocked that Don thinks this is so straightforward.
Wow.
I don't think it's straightforward at all.
What?
Well, the goalkeeper's coming out. The goalkeeper's coming out and makes himself big. Yes, he hangs his leg up off the ground.
Well,
the fact is the ball, he. Well, that's arguable because Vogel's going forward, as is Areola going forward. Areola's making himself big. Areola actually had Areola caught him before he got the ball with his left peg.
Look at this angle.
Then I would have maybe said so, but no, absolutely no. I can't believe you think this is obvious.
Ali?
He boots him in the knees.
Absolutely not.
100% a
absolutely
penalty.
Not.
No, oh my goodness.
No,
Stevie.
Not giving it.
Stevie, you're saying that Areola is just kind of barely hanging his leg out. Are you kidding me? He's got his leg on the knees of the player. And a swing through at the knees. He just kneecapped this player.
He's making himself big.
Really big. Huge. He's making himself humongous.
Tell you what, by the way, it's a good job you two aren't on VAR.
Well, don't you think that's...
We've been penalties flying all over the place.
Oh, Stevie, man. Don't you think that's like Van Dijk, Jordan Pickford?
Look how big Don's hand is.
Very big hands.
Not at all. Nothing like it.
How? It's exactly the same.
Oh, my goodness.
It's exactly the same.
No chance.
He's just hanging his leg out.
More from the guys over on Extra Time. You can check that out over on our YouTube channel. We'll be talking about Stevie's infamous mask.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Let's talk about a couple of Americans abroad, shall we, who featured in the Champions League. Ali with me in the studio, Steve Casey and Sid Lowe with us as well. Sid, let's start with Sergiño Dest. Definitely not his best night, obviously, against PSG. What's the reaction been like in Catalonia?
Well, in truth, in terms of reaction directly about Sergiño Dest's own performance, there hasn't been a huge reaction in that it hasn't been focused upon him. I think in terms of the analysis of the way that he played, I think he's probably seen more as a victim than a guilty party in this. Bear in mind that this is Barcelona conceding a lot of goals in Europe again. You know, this is a team that of course got beat by Paris Saint-Germain before, got beat by Juventus before, by Roma, by Liverpool. This isn't anything new. I think there's a sense as well that Sergiño Dest came back after an injury, perhaps a bit quickly, had Piqué alongside him, had also come back from an injury, perhaps a bit quickly, had a team that got ran through far too easily against a team that was more athletic than them, was more direct than them, had Mbappé playing absolutely brilliantly, and that these are recurring flaws. And these are flaws that recur from an era well before Sergiño Dest. So although it's true that Koeman talked afterwards about focus and about concentration, about a learning process, I don't think for a minute that anyone in Catalonia is pointing the finger at Dest and saying that's the reason things went wrong against PSG.
However, if I'm a young player, I can't not look at the critics. I can't look at the fact that Lequipe gave me 2 out of 10, that Sport gave me 2 out of 10. Mm-hmm. It's got to have a bit of a psychological impact, doesn't it?
Right. And if he is objective and he looks at himself in the mirror, he would know that he should not have been on the field. Because Sergiño Dest was just coming back from injury. Just like Gerard Piqué, they should not have been on the field. You don't expose this kid, who, yes, may be a learning experience, but the learning experience cannot be accelerated when you're coming off an injury and you say, hey, Sergiño, I got something for you that is going to make you learn real quick. Here's Kylian Mbappe coming at you time and time again. See how you deal with that. And then, post-match, if you're Ronald Koeman, then say, well, you know, this is about focus and concentration. And also, by the way, he's had some issues with injury. Yes, he's had issues with injuries. Yeah. You don't put him out there unless you're for certain sure that this is a kid that can compete at that level, at that point, against this player. And I don't think the answer to that was yes at any point against Kylian Mbappe.
Now, that's the point as well, Casey. We've seen this before from Ronald Koeman and his questionable man management. As Ali said, come out. He's a kid. He's been injured. You know, you can give him a pass as opposed to focus and concentration. That doesn't really help things.
Well, and you would think that a manager that has that much experience would then just almost get that player's back and say, look, I asked him to do a favor for me. I know we've had some injury issues, he being one of them, and I needed him to come try to help us out when he wasn't quite where he needed to be. But I almost look at that as a manager just trying to deflect off of his own decision making, and that's tough for a young player.
Steve, as a youngster, you must have had games in which you were just torn apart left, right, and center. Maybe as a veteran as well. Like, how do you respond to it?
Yeah, thanks, Dan. It was pretty much my entire career, so I was usually that guy pulling the ball out of the back of the net. I appreciate that. But as a member of a back line, or even a goalkeeper for that matter, even more so, you're really dependent upon the people in front of you. So problems actually happen further up the field and break down much further than just in the back line. So really, he's a sitting duck. I don't think it's fair to put all the blame on him, and as what we've heard in the media as well, it hasn't been. But I don't disagree with the decision of the coach to play him, because this is an extremely valuable experience for this young man that he can grow up. I know this game didn't go very well, and that's the reason it will stick in his mind, and he'll reflect upon it, and he'll learn from it. So this is an experience that the coach has given him, probably looking forward down this road this season and into the following seasons coming up, that this kid can reflect on and learn from and grow on and become even better. And if he doesn't play in that game, then it's a lesson he did not learn.
It's been a position that Barcelona have struggled to kind of fill, Sid, if you like, if you take a look at the players that have come and gone. And is there a fear that Sergiño Dest is someone that Ronald Koeman brought in, could be someone who could leave early with the coach when he leaves at the end of the season?
I think that fear is always going to be there at Barcelona, and I think it's going to be there partly for the reason that you've outlined there, which is, of course, that he comes in as someone that Koeman directly wanted and was very, very clear about. And also, by the way, it's probably worth noting that Koeman is very, very blunt about everything. So him saying this about Sergiño Dest is possibly not a huge surprise. It's partly about his approach. But then the other reason why I think there's a risk that Sergiño Dest gets put in that position is, of course, Barcelona are a club that are about to have a new president. So there's an institutional instability there, so you don't know what the new president wants to do. They're also a club with massive financial problems, so you don't know what they're going to do should someone come in and make an offer for Dest, because they think this is a young player who's going to be, in Koeman's words, very, very good indeed in 4 or 5 years' time. Maybe someone comes in for him. And the best example of this is Semedo. Semedo last summer, who, of course, was the person playing in the position Sergiño Dest now occupies, was one of those players that the president had named as being untouchable. He wasn't one of the ones that was going to be pushed out as part of this revolution. All of the older players were going to be, but he was the future. He was young. He wasn't going to be pushed out. What happened? What happened was there was a market in which Barcelona couldn't generate any money for any of their players, and suddenly Wolves came in for Semedo and said, here's 40 million euros. At that point, Barcelona are looking around thinking, well, we're not getting money from anywhere else. Mm. Yeah, we'll take it. So there's that element as well. What happens if at some point other clubs see Dest as an asset and come to them, and Barcelona think, well, we've just got to take the money where we can get it?
Meanwhile, Steve, Tyler Adams, of course, starting for Leipzig in their defeat against Liverpool. How would you sum up his performance?
You know, very calm. I think good performance, above average performance. And I think, you know, what separates Tyler aside from other players is at a very young age already, he's playing like an old vet. He's a player you don't really see on the field very much, which is a compliment in every sense of the way of this. I can say that he doesn't make mistakes. He's reliable and at a very high level already. He gets the job done defensively. He has moments offensively. And I think his biggest attribute is winning balls in very good areas of the field to start counterattacks and to set his team up for chances as well. So he's already, in my opinion, an extremely valuable player for this club, but also moving forward for the U.S. national team.
Boys, thank you very much. Thank you to Ali as well. Of course, both those players will be looking to make an impact once again. Both teams looking to turn things around in the next leg of those Champions League matches next month.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
All right, then, that is it. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. Stay tuned, though. Extra Time is next. Stevie and Don back. We'll be talking about what Stevie got up to this weekend. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you very much, as always, for your tweets. Ali Moreno with me in the studio. Donna Hutchison is with us, as is Steve Nicol. We have had so many questions about one subject in particular, and that is Stevie's choice of mask that he wore at the weekend whilst out with his granddaughter.
Choice.
In case you haven't seen it, do we have a picture of the mask, of said mask? Ready?
Oh, there it is. Hello.
Hey. So let's take this one, Stevie. Why was that the only mask you had?
Well, I've no idea, because I got in the car with Nora, right, and I'm driving along, and I'm 2 minutes away from the place, a place called Playtime, we were going to, and I thought, oh, masks. Now, there was a a Moana one hanging on the mirror, and right. I thought, oh no. So when I got there, I looked everywhere in the car, couldn't find anything. And then I went in and I thought, you know what, maybe the girl will have an extra one in the place. So I walk in, and as I'm walking in, I put my hand in my jacket pocket, and of course I pull out a mask. So I looked at it and I thought, there's no way I can walk about with that. So I put it back in my pocket because I thought, the girl will give me one. So I got in and she went, no, we don't have another one. I was like, oh, here we go.
So, looks so like the picture behind you.
Oh, seriously. After that, looks I like spent picture. All day with people looking at me.
Well, yes.
People are walking past like that. I was there for 2.5 hours, and I don't think there was one person didn't wow. stare at me for about 5 minutes. I was like, I felt like a right tube.
Did you consider wearing it inside out, Stevie? That would have worked, wouldn't it?
Well, I couldn't, because my wife had it on, and there was purple lipstick all over it. So I couldn't do that either.
That would have been better.
So that would have been even worse than sitting there with purple lipstick on it.
Oh, my God. Beautiful.
There you go. That's the way it goes.
God. Kids loved it. It's like the Rolling Stones.
Well, yes, yeah.
Mick Jagger.
It's a Mick Jagger situation.
Very much so.
Yeah, unfortunately, nobody said, are you Mick Jagger? Never said anything like that.
And Don, there's been the development to you giving £250 to people who are asking for money to get back to Ireland, I understand.
Yes, on Friday night, I worked with a friend of mine, Leroy Rossignol, and he come in with a massive smile on his face at work, and I went, what are you laughing at? And he went, I've just been at a service station, and someone has asked me for £200 to get to Holyhead. I'm a Christian. And Leroy, just get out. Just get out.
So you're suggesting maybe it's a scam around the gas stations, Don?
I think I've just about sussed it, Dan. I think it is a scam.
That doesn't matter, Don. You did a good thing. That doesn't matter.
You're right, yes.
Stevie. Yeah. Wait, what are the chances that Stevie would have given the £250?
Stevie would have given him a mask.
What?
There you go.
I have a real nice mask for you. With purple lipstick.
I would have given him £250 to take the mask.
Stevie wouldn't remember his PIN number, to be fair. Okay, Ali, Koeman always talks about Barca being a team in transition, but he never acts like that. He keeps starting the same players again and again who have been part of the previous humiliation. What are your thoughts on this?
The message from Ronald Koeman over the course of the season has been very inconsistent, because he has told us, yes, this is a team in transition, but there's been moments in which Barcelona has had opportunities to get back on the title race, to make a run in Champions League. And in those moments, the team should not be in transition. In those moments, you need your best 11, whatever that best 11 is, out on the field. The issue is, he has never really settled as to what the best 11 for Barcelona has been. And so therefore, we see inconsistency after inconsistency.
Stevie, how would it look if Pochettino takes PSG to the Champions League title and Spurs fail to qualify for any European spots? Will it be time for Levy to acknowledge that he made a mistake?
Ooh. Do you know what? I think probably people at PSG would think, why didn't we get rid of Tommy Tuchel earlier? As opposed to Levy thinking about getting rid of Pochettino. I mean, the truth is, Tottenham were pretty woeful when Pochettino left, so I think Levy had every right. I wouldn't have done it, but it's hard to argue when, at the end of the day, it's all about results. And certainly they weren't getting results, and they weren't playing well either.
PSG struggling at the moment, of course, lost against Monaco at the weekend. Does Arsenal feel their 1-0 loss at Manchester City is a victory, Don? Seems like Arsenal are just happy not to get destroyed.
I know, it felt like that, Dan. It felt like once City took the lead, you think this could be 5 or 6. And then Arsenal fans are thinking they got back in the game and done quite well, but that wasn't the game I watched. I thought City were toying with Arsenal. I thought they could have scored at any time, and then they just thought, well, do you know what? You're not going to score. We're good enough at the back. Ruben Diaz was brilliant. And they just thought, you know what, we'll just conserve energy, we'll beat you 1-0 and we'll just move on to the next game against Gladbach. But Arsenal are way off it.
Don, what percentage chance...
Oh, here we go.
Can we just look at the camera properly?
Yes.
Do you give West Ham next season winning the Champions League?
Oh boy, here we go.
Oh, oh my goodness.
Zero. Even Don can walk that one out.
Zero. My man maths is not good, but I'm pretty sure I'll be right on that one.
Not even a 0.1.
No, zero.
After Salah was compared to Messi in training, Stevie, who was the best ever player in training that you played with, and were they able to replicate it in matches?
Yeah, Barnsley.
He could do it all.
Did it every day in training, did it, thank you. Dalglish was the same. Did it every day in training, did it every time you stepped on the field. Yeah, no danger, both of them.
Was there anyone who was rubbish in training, Stevie, but then good on match days?
Oh, Rushy.
Really?
Rushy and Hansen.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to take what not to do, then you have a look at the two of them in training. I mean, they just got by. But I'll tell you what, it worked for them because when the whistle blew, they were absolutely sensational, the two of them. So, listen, what works for one doesn't always work for the other. But the two of them were scary.
Don?
Yeah, same. I mean, we had a player called Mike Marsh, Steve will remember. And he was everyone's picking a five-a-side. Marshy was sensational at a five-a-side, a 6v6, 7v7. But he just couldn't sort of... I wouldn't say he couldn't do it on 11v11, but it just wasn't his forte, it wasn't his skill. Once the pitch went really big, you couldn't get around the pitch. But as technique goes, and someone you'd have a first pick playing a 5-6-a-side, Marshy was incredible. One touch, two touch, vision, everything.
Did you change the question, Dan?
No, I just thought I'd flip it.
Well,
I just thought I'd flip it.
That's all right, you can flip it, Don. That's all right.
Yeah,
that's exactly. Okay. This, of course, is Felipe Luis's interview with Sid, talking about that Salah in training was just exceptional. Which makes you think, well, I know Chelsea were excellent then, but what was Mourinho doing?
You can ask that very same question of Jose Mourinho right now. Well, what are you doing, Jose? Because whatever you're doing is not working. And it's not only Salah. Kevin De Bruyne was there.
Yeah.
And it's like, not quite. And now he's become the player he's become. Now, obviously, maybe at that point they weren't ready to take the step that they've taken now in their careers. But as a manager, part of your job is to be able to figure out, you know what, there is something here. There is something here that I can exploit, something here that I can use, something here that we can nurture, and we can make it grow, and he can be useful to us.
Right.
That's part of the job description.
Yeah.
Jose Mourinho cut his losses very early on both Salah, Roina, Lukaku. The list goes on of the players that have gone through Jose Mourinho that haven't quite had the performances that he was asking for, and then they moved on and done much better things over their careers.
I like this question. Have the guys ever seen a halftime manager talk help a team bounce back? Because we imagine the manager always inspiring a team, Stevie, but does it actually happen that much?
Well, I think it depends how often the manager has to actually talk to you for that particular reason. You know, if generally with a good side, there might be two or three games, maximum of three, probably a couple, where you're just not quite at it, and then you come in at half-time and you get it, and it doesn't have to make a difference. But I would suggest that the more often the manager has to do it, the less impact it has, because it's one of them, well, I've heard it all before.
Right.
As opposed to a couple of times a year when you get a roast and you're like, oh, hold on a second, I don't want this again.
Don, was there a team talk that sticks out in your mind?
Yeah, best one I've ever had. And Stevie might have played in the game. Liverpool drew Bolton in the FA Cup at Ferndon Park. And the manager turned the undersoil heating off. So it was like a skating rink. It was live on TV and it was so dangerous. It was incredible. We were 2-0 down.
Is that the Cups?
We were 2-0 down.
Don't know, the Cups coming.
Yeah, the Cups are coming.
The Cups coming.
We were 2-0 down and Graeme Souness come in at half-time and he fired about 30 cups over everyone's head. Teapots, coffee, boots, everything was gone up in the air and every single one of us got absolutely hammered off Graeme Souness. And somehow, They scored a ridiculous own goal, and I think Rushy scored in the game. We got back and we got a 2-2, but it was scandalous of Bolton turning the underside heating off.
Wow.
Suey's half-time team talk, my word, that was something special.
What springs to mind, Dan?
Well, it also depends on what stage of your career you are, right? If you're a guy that's been around 10 years professional and you have heard all sorts of speeches, halftime, pregame, what have you, and some guy comes in and tries to give you something different or spin something that in a way in which it fuels the younger guys, but the veteran guy is sitting back and is like, you know what? We stink,
right?
We know we stink. You know we stink.
Is this Chivas days?
I think at that point, that's where I reached that level of just, you know what? It's just not going to work out. We're just not good enough, right? And whatever you say, it's going to, fine. We're going to be fired up and we're going to get out there. But the truth of the matter is that we don't have the players here. We cannot compete with that team. And I think as a younger guy, you believe in the, yeah, let's go. It's us, guys. We can do this. As an older guy, you become a little jaded and you just kind of go, this is not going to work out. Mm-mm.
Stevie, at the Revs, did you throw cups and teapots and things?
No, I tell you what I was going to say. You know, Ali said that and I get that. But I tell you what, Ali, you should try and be on the other end of that, actually knowing everything you've just said about your team. You're actually standing there and you're doing everything you can to gee them up, to help them out. And in the back of your brain, you're thinking to yourself, I'm absolutely wasting my breath here because these numpties have got no idea what I'm talking about.
Must be the same as Don's maths teacher. It's cool. It's a complete waste of my time.
I may have told this story before, but that song by the Black Eyed Peas is like, tonight
yeah, it's going to be a good night. Tonight's going to be a good night, right. Yeah.
And they would play that song in the locker room at Chivas USA. They would play this song, and it was loud, and tonight's going to be a good night. And I'm sitting in my locker, and I remember thinking this distinctly. I said to myself, I think it's going to be an okay night, but I don't know that it's going to be a good night. Best we can hope for is an okay night.
Oh, man. Stevie, I brought this up. I think even maybe just last week, your halftime team talk where you said there's three things you need to focus on, and you forgot the third.
Oh, that was actually before the game. I got the first two out, then I went, and I turned to Mara and I went, what was the third one? And everybody just started laughing. I went, right, on you go. Couldn't remember the third one.
Oh, dear. Don, I like the thought of you sitting in a locker room and a manager kind of losing it or trying to inspire, and you just sat there going, shut up.
No, I've never said that. That was Ali that said that. I remember being at Old Trafford, six down in a cup game, and I was on the bench, and Glenn Rhoda said to me, get warmed up, you're going on. 6-0 down. I thought, there's no chance that's happening. So I got up, went to warm up down at the sort of Stretford end, and I seen a seat in the main stand, and I just thought, yeah, I'm just going to sit in there for the next 20 minutes. I'm not going on.
Oh, God. Oh, no. Wow. That's disappointing.
That was inspirational.
It's not enough to be half time.
What am I going to do 6-0 down?
Wow.
Well, be part of a team.
Who was the worst diver the guys played against in their career? Stevie.
Moreno.
Hey!
No. Yeah. See, that's wrong. Because I was not the worst. I was the best at doing it. Not the worst. The best.
Oh, my God.
No. Only because the numpties in the middle that had the whistle in the hand wouldn't know the difference between a dive and a challenge or a push. So that's how you got away with it most of the time. These idiots in the middle, honest to goodness. Not a clue.
Don to the... Don, worst diver?
I'm trying to think. There was a player who was at Crystal Palace. I think his name was Andy Johnson. Small centre forward.
Yeah,
bald head.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he used to go down for fun.
That kind of sounded like me.
Mental.
Hey, Don. Does Rocket Ronnie Rosenthal come in?
But he wasn't smart enough to go down. He tried to stay on his feet.
Rocket Ronnie.
Stevie, do you prefer playing a back three, a back four, or a back five?
It depends on the makeup of your team. Listen, if you've got a guy with a real brain that can just stand in the middle and you get a couple of meatheads either side of them that can direct them around, then there's dynamite. You just got one guy just organising everything. So if you've got that guy, then you can play three, which means you can get... I always thought playing three meant I could get an extra guy forward, which is why I did it. But I only did it when I had a guy in the middle, like Parkey, that had a brain and could organise people around him.
I would love someone now to just appear out of nowhere and set you up with a lie detector, Stevie, because the final question is, what did you think of the teenager Don Hutchinson as a player? Did you think that this guy could cut it in the league?
Ooh.
He's thinking of that being nice.
Don was a wee bit cocky early doors, to be honest, but there's no question he had ability. Listen, you don't have the career in the Premier League that Don had unless you've got ability.
Such a politician. Yeah. In what way was he cocky, Stephen?
Well, listen, he came when the culture of everything was changing. You know, the culture that I joined was when you go in, you keep your head down, you keep your mouth shut, you got on with your stuff.
Right.
So when Don came in and the front door opened, it was just... who's this guy?
That's about right, actually.
Is that fair, Don?
That's about right. It is absolutely fair. I was just
probably a little exaggeration, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, you're not far up, mate. I was loving life. I came from Hartlepool, who were like bottom of the second division, and then all of a sudden I've signed for Liverpool, who are like the greatest team on earth, like the biggest club in the world. And I'm like, I'm here. Like, what we're doing today? What we're gonna do? And they're like, calm down, youngin, calm down.
Yeah, I bet.
Actually, when I think of Don, I always think of him and Jamie Redknapp, because in the morning, as soon as he got off the bus, he'd go in, get a ball, get on the field. Because we used to hang about for about half an hour before we started training. And the two of them used to get balls, and the two of them could ping it. And they just used to stand and ping it back and forward for half an hour. That's what I always remember of them.
What do you remember about Stevie, Don?
Oh, here we go.
Oh,
memory lane. Good question. Ah, Stevie was as funny as as most in the dressing room. He was, as you know, he's a larger than life character.
No one wants to be described as that.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, character.
Which
would
have laughed, by the way.
No, you know what I mean. The life and soul. If any jokes are happening, because there used to be a culture at Liverpool, and Stevie will remember, that we used to have a Christmas party. And the skipper, whoever it was at the time. No, I know.
Just leave
and the skipper
it.
At the time and the skipper at the time used to remember everyone's mistakes, as in like what they've said and the mistakes that they've made. And then they'd get the young boys at the end of the Christmas party to try and tell a few sort of mistakes that they've made over the years, and it was just comical. But Stevie buzzed off it. He buzzed off the young lads. He was an experienced pro, and he had all these, you know, the Barnsies and the Rushies and all the lads that he hung around with for like a decade. But when the young lads come in, we took to him like very easy.
Stevie, you said you didn't have Christmas parties at Liverpool.
I don't think we did. No, I don't think we did.
That's it.
Hold on. Yeah, the door's
can't
hear.
Dan, I remember being on an aeroplane. With Liverpool, and we played Genoa in the Cup Winners' Cup. And we sort of got the tickets, and I've got on the plane, and there was this woman sitting on the plane, and she was absolutely 10 out of 10.
Uh-oh.
And I was like 18, 19, I'm thinking, please don't let me sit next to her. Please don't let me sit next to her. So anyway, I've got my ticket and I'm sat right next to her. And John Barnes is in front of me. Stevie's to my sort of right-hand side. And Ian Rush, all the big hitters are like right next to me. And this girl sitting in the middle, she was gorgeous. And they're going, you've got to say something. You've got to say something. And I was so nervous. Like, I was petrified. And I sort of leant across and gave her a little nudge. And I've gone, you okay? And she's gone, yeah. And I went, where are you going? She went, same place as you, Genoa. And then the boys are just, oh, I was like, oh,
brilliant. Good stuff. Excellent.
Where are you going?
More of Tom's top 10 pickup lines coming up for extra time throughout the week. Thanks, boys. ESPN FC back on your screens tomorrow. Champions League, of course, very much the priority.
Where are you going?
Ah, dear me.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at LectricEbikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC eBikes.com.